The voice of Husker Nation is on the air. This is Hail Varsity Radio. Insight, opinion, expertise, along with the biggest names talking Nebraska sports. Join in with the show at 402-489-1240 or 1-800-825-5865. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and Elijah Herbel.
Back in on a Friday, it's Hour 2, it's Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency for all of your equipment financing needs. Go Currency, Elijah Herbel and Brady Altman's with you on a Friday. I should say special guest, Brady Altman's, kind enough to sit in with me here on a Friday, a yearbook release day, at least the cover for Hail Varsity Magazine. So Brady's giving us some insight there. We're talking some Husker football, and we're going to get into that with Bill Dolman as Bill joins us from the great state of Florida. He has told me he just crossed over the big bridge in Tampa. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's an innuendo, but we go to Bill Dolman now joining us from the great state of Florida. Bill, how are we doing today?
Well, doing quite well. I'm in Florida, for Pete's sake. How do you think I'm doing? I'm crossing over the iconic Tampa Bridge as we speak right now.
What makes it? I've never heard of the Tampa Bridge. I can't lie.
Is this a Bill Dolman special? What's going on here? What is this Tampa Bridge?
Have we lost Bill? We may have lost Bill. I've looked up a picture, and the Tampa Bay Bridge is quite impressive.
Are you there now?
Yeah, we're here. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, apparently there's no cell service on said bridge.
This is the Sunshine Skyway Bridge. Is that the one you're referring to?
That's it.
It's got like a big arch in the middle. I can't lie. I looked up a picture. It is quite impressive. I did not know this existed in Tampa Bay.
Well, that's where I am, and congratulations to Brady on that on the promotion after giving that 2-hour show that he did like 2-3 weeks ago, talking about recruiting.
Oh, the reception's cut out.
Certainly paid off to go sit in the big chair today. So, congratulations on that.
You know, you work your way up sometimes. You know, we all got to put in our hours elsewhere to work our way up the ladder.
Bill, let's start this off here today. You told me that the only reason that you would hop on today is if we asked you about the Indy 500 to get your reaction. So we're going to start with the Indy 500. We start with Joseph Newgarden. You had a story there. Let's segmentize it first. Let's first start out here with your reaction to the Indy 500 as it went down last weekend, obviously in Indianapolis. What were your thoughts, Bill? I know you're a big Indianapolis 500 fan.
A big race fan. It was, you know what, after the split that took place about 25 years ago, that the Indy 500 this year was the one that finally brought the series back to where it should be, which is the greatest race series in the world. I know people are all enamored with Formula One, but, you know, there's just not the racing and the passing that you have in IndyCar. So that was spectacular. To see 325,000 people back in the seats again, jamming the place, is just a testament to the great leadership of Roger Penske. Or Auto NASCAR, been heartened to see the scene of so many people back in the seats again. And yes, Joseph Newgarden finally put together the lessons learned from the race that he and I had in Houston about 10 years ago. All of that learning finally paid off in an IndyCar championship. So congratulations to the newest, greatest American. Wait, and hopefully IndyCar is able to capitalize on his victory. But he and I did have a go-kart race on a high-speed go-kart track south of Houston about 10 years ago. And I still... pass me like he did Marcus Ericsson. I was able to hold him off, but watching a professional race car driver, even on a go-kart track, was very impressive. But I did one time in my life race an IndyCar champion.
Okay, so that answers the question that I had, which was, did he know that it was a race?
I think he did, because he did his best to, you know, to leave me behind. And like I said, he didn't lap me. So that's the positive. I tried to stay in his tracks. I tried to follow his line the best I could. He never got out of sight. But, man, he it's amazing to watch, you know, even on a go-kart track. And at the time, he was like a 21, 22-year-old kid. He was driving for Sarah Fisher Racing and on his way up, and you could tell he was going to be a star. But I it's just amazing to try and stay in the tracks and have no chance to pass a guy like that. So that was one of the great moments of my sporting life.
So when you say high speed, though, what speeds are we talking?
Oh, yeah, 50s, probably. Oh,
so this isn't Champions Fun Center. This is legit go-karting.
No. This is not. This was serious go-karting, and he was seriously good.
What makes him special? Because, like, yeah, to people who watch Drive to Survive, you see these F1 drivers, you know, practicing their braking and practicing just all these little ins and outs. Racing seems so technical. Like, were you able to get a sense of that from racing with a guy like that, just how technical and how perfect a guy like this is, from millimeter perfect on his turns down to the millisecond in terms of their braking? Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, you try to stay the line, and you can just sense where that a guy like that knows exactly where to brake going into a turn. You know, just everything about it. And you know, it was only a matter of, you know, a couple of races that we had that day, and I tried to follow it. Even after, it's just something that comes with experience. But it was fun. It was fun to meet him when he was a kid. It's been great to follow his career. And like I said, he is the newest American racing hero, and I hope it capitalizes on what he did. And him going into the stands to celebrate, you know, that was a cool moment. So anybody who's a race car fan ought to be celebrating the Indy 500, the scene that it was, the fact that Newgarden won it.
I'll just say, with them being on the same weekend, I would much rather watch the Indy 500 than Monaco. Monaco, if you're an F1 fan out there, it's not the same as what it once was. But, Bill, I'm thinking that in another life you could have been an IndyCar driver.
That wouldn't have bothered me any. But Houston used to have a couple of Grand Prix, on back-to-back days, actually. Uh-huh. Much like they'll have this weekend in Detroit, they had back-to-back races around the Astrodome, actually. And it was a thrill, but it was also a thrill. I got a chance to do a documentary on A.J. Foyt and meet the Foyt family and Larry and do a lengthy sit-down interview with A.J. Foyt and go out to his track or his shop out in Keller, Texas. So for a guy who's followed IndyCar racing for about the past 50 years, and A.J. Foyt was as an iconic American hero when it comes to racing and sporting life, to meet him, that was a thrill. So the Indy 500 was great this week, and it was great to be able to cover it 10 years ago.
Bill Dolman's with us here at his usual Friday spot. It's Hail Varsity Radio. As Bill, we're going to switch gears, talk some football here. And the news of the day has been from the Big 12, as Commissioner Yarmak saying that they want a coast-to-coast conference. He feels that Big 12 leadership is unified in their front in terms of what they want from expansion. They've already added a Florida school and UCF. They've gone down to Houston. They've gotten BYU, and rumors are out there. I shouldn't forget about Cincinnati as well, but the rumors out there in the past couple days that Colorado may be the next to jump ship and head off to the Big 12 and maybe add three or four more schools on top of that from the Big 12's perspective. What's your reaction to the Big 12 trying to become the next coast-to-coast conference, trying to retain their status as a power conference?
Well, they went out and they got a marketing guy, much like the Pac-12 did, and it appears this guy is going to be much better at his job and at least, marketing is a power, conference. It still is not going to be the Big Ten and the SEC. It's just not. When the Big Ten expands, it goes to get an iconic brand in Nebraska 10 years ago, and then it goes out and it gets, the D.C. area with Maryland and the New York area sort of with Rutgers, although nobody cares. But then you expand and you have USC and UCLA, right? I mean, those are major, major brands, and the Big 12 is going after UCF, BYU, Colorado. Nobody cares out there. They will for one day in September. But they're trying. And I really think what you're going to have is the Power 2. Then you're going to have the Big 12, a next tier below. Competitive. There's no question it's going to be competitive. But iconic, it's not going to be iconic, right? I'm sure they're going to add Colorado. Utah will probably follow suit. They'll renew the BYU-Utah rivalry, which will be significant. Maybe they get the Arizonas. And who knows, maybe San Diego State, you know, if they want to go out to Southern California and grab the Aztecs. I suppose that's – if you have UCF, you might as well get San Diego State. To me, they're the same thing.
Well, that's the definition of coast-to-coast then.
Say again?
That'd be the definition of coast-to-coast if you got Florida and Southern California.
Right, yeah. But you have schools that are all kind of the same ilk. Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, San Diego State, BYU, all of those fit in the same kind of character, the same kind of mold. But they're not UCLA, USC, Nebraska, you know, for whatever it's worth, Maryland, and the way the Big, you know, the Big Ten has expanded and whatever the Big Ten wants to do next and whenever that's going to happen, who knows? They've got to get that TV contract sorted out. But, you know, whatever the Big Ten's next move is, it will trump anything that the Big 12 does to try and label itself as a coast-to-coast.
So having said that, Bill, with your experience working in TV, what's, as a preemptive move or planning out their next steps, if you are right now in charge of expansion in the Big 12, give me three markets that you would want to go to or hunker down in order to either get an extra payout from the Big 12 or Big 10 or SEC if they want to poach said school, or just good markets to have in there in order to expand the Big 12 brand?
I think for them, the rivalries will be important. So that's why, you know, the Pac-12 tried to force, you know, Colorado and Utah together as a rival. Well, that was as natural as Nebraska and Colorado, you know, in the Big 12. But I think if they can go, they'll get Colorado in all likelihood. And again, I still think that people in Denver don't realize that they are actually in the Pac-12 right now. But I think if you go get them and you bring back Utah and you have you renew the rivalry with Utah and BYU, that would be a huge move, bigger than probably the Big 12 realizes. That rivalry is just flat out hatred, and that'll be good, you know, for the conference to have that as intense as it is right off the bat. And you put that on an iconic type of day, you know, in November, up against anything that the Big Ten might have or the SEC might have, that would be huge. And then the Arizona schools, I think, would also be healthy.
Bill Dolman's with us here at Hail Varsity Radio. And, Bill, in the era of conference expansion, feels like every conference, if they aren't there already, is soon to be a 16-team conference. It just feels like the way the world is moving. Do you think it's fair that the SEC is keeping an 8-game conference schedule moving forward, at least in 2024. They say they'll reevaluate for 2025, but I don't see any reason for them to change unless there's any real pitfalls with sticking with 8, and right now there isn't. They still get a spot in the college football playoff regardless. You get one tune-up game in November to get your team healthy. That's what the SEC's done for a while. That's what they're going to continue to do moving forward. What's your reaction to that in the era of conference expansion when it feels like the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 are all going to be 16 schools soon? That, you know what, the Big Ten and the other power conferences, they got 9 conference games, but the SEC remains at 8. Do you have a reaction?
I think that's for the time being. I think maybe, you know, ESPN having an SEC contract, I think that's significant, right? But I think eventually there's going to be a governing body over, you know, the college football. Maybe the college football playoff is the governing body, and they just call it something else, like College Football Association 2.0, after what it was, what was that, 30, 40 years ago. But I think eventually there might be something that says, look, we really need to unify this. Everybody's got to have 9 conference games, and maybe that will, whenever the next iteration of TV contracts are up and whatever anybody's willing to pay, I'd be surprised if the SEC can continue on with that. I think at some point they're going to have to go to 9. In the meantime, every hyphenated directional school in the South is going to be a lot richer for it, because they'll all get they'll all get scheduled by all the powerhouses, and they'll play a lot of those weak sister games to pad the schedule and pad the record.
Hey, Southeast Missouri State deserves a brand new volleyball facility, as just as much as anybody else, Bill.
Exactly.
Well, and Bill, this might be regressing a little bit, but I want to ask you straight up in terms of like the Big 12 and expansion and going out. Is Colorado at all as attractive of a brand as it is now without Deion? Does he need to be there to make it happen?
They had to do that to have relevancy, and they'll have that for however long he is there, or for however long the people are still enamored with him. The fortunate thing for Deion Sanders in Colorado, I guess, is that if things don't go all that well, either right away or eventually, which I think most people predict that the luster is going to eventually fade, they'll still get overwhelmed like they always have been by the Broncos. And if Sean Payton has any sense of semblance of success there, that'll overshadow anything that Colorado does. Even if Deion Sanders does have success, for the most part, they'll still be overshadowed by the Broncos. So, yeah, they have him now. They're relevant. They're talked about. If they start off with a loss at TCU and then they lose to Nebraska in week two, they're going to be, praying for that NFL season to go well, because people are going to lose their shine for Coach Prime.
Bill Dolman's with us here. It's Hail Varsity Radio. Bill joining us from Florida. And Bill, we're going to let you get back to the sunshine and the warm weather. We appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your Friday, though.
All right, guys. Great to visit with you. Go Big Red.